Classic Country, 1450 AM and 103.5 FM KBBS. This is Community Speaks, and it's being brought to you by The Prescription Shop on Fort Street in Buffalo. And joining me this morning is Bud Stewart with Wyoming Game and Fish. Bud, how you doing today?
Good, Brady. How about you? You had a late night last night.
I did. You know, it's always an easier drive home when your teams win, and both Buffalo teams got the win last night down in Rawlins, so getting home at midnight and being back to work here at 4:30 this morning wasn't too terribly
well,
bad.
Well, I listened to the game up till halftime, and you know, at that point, Buffalo wasn't doing very well.
Yeah, it changed
so
in the second half.
A little
half.
Bit of concern, so I was hoping they'd make some halftime adjustments and come out, and that's good they did.
They certainly did. And Bud, you're not alone today. You've got quite the crew with you.
We do have quite a crew here. You know, we have Cheyenne Stewart, who's a Buffalo wildlife biologist. Of course, she's been on before. And Jim Seaman, the Buffalo game warden. Jim's been here several times before, but we got a new person this morning. Justin Dodd is the KC game warden. Justin's been down there about five months or so. Justin.
Yep.
So just wanted to introduce him and let folks know that he's there, and they'll probably be seeing him around, especially during hunting seasons. But even now, you know, because these guys are out and about, and. We're going to talk about deer surveys here first, and these are the three that in the Buffalo KC area that do those deer surveys, whether it's from the air or from the ground. But we want to talk about the deer survey here in this area, and Cheyenne kind of takes the lead on that. So we're gonna have her talk about that first. So have at it.
Good morning. So everyone should probably put their thinking caps on. It's a little early for that, but we'll have a bunch of numbers for you guys. So as Bud said, we do our classifications from the ground and from a helicopter. And so we go out, and every individual deer that we see, we try to identify what it is. So is it an adult male, a yearling male, a female, or a juvenile? And then when we see those adult bucks, we also try to split them out from the class size. And so since we're looking really fast and trying to be consistent, we're just estimating the max antler spread. So that way we can get a general indication of the quality of bucks in the herd. And so as we're doing these counts, there's a couple key numbers that we kind of tie into to look at the health of the herd and the production of the herd from year to year. And so one of those is the fawn ratio. So the way we look at that is the number of fawns that we see for every 100 does in the population. And so 66 is kind of a good key cutoff number to keep in mind. If you have 66 fawns per 100 does, we expect the population to at least be stable, but likely actually increasing as they come into winter. We also look at buck ratios in the same way, so the number of bucks per 100 does that we see. And so for adult bucks, we look at about 30 to 40 bucks per 100 does, which would indicate that we're recruiting older age class bucks into the population. And then the reason that we break out the yearling bucks per 100 does is so that we can get an indication of how last year's fawns survived. So it's hard to tell a yearling doe from an adult doe, but it's pretty easy to get a yearling buck. And so that is how we can see, you know, the previous year that yearling buck was a fawn, so we get an idea of how many of those fawns survived to become a yearling. And so every year we use these classification surveys. We also use our hunter harvest surveys, landowner surveys, and our hunter field checks to set our seasons for the next year. And so that's why these deer classifications are really good information for us to have. So,
did you want to run through some of the individual findings?
Happily. So, we in this area will talk about 9 hunt areas, and so this is when people's ears will perk up because they usually, you know their local hunt areas pretty well. And so, the summary data I'm going to give you right now is for deer hunt areas 26, 27, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 163, and 169. So in all of those hunt areas combined, we were able to actually look at 4,294 individual deer and classify them into one of those groups that I had talked about. And so what we found was an average fawn per 100 does is 66 fawns per 100 does. And so as I mentioned before, that 66 is a pretty good indication that we should have at least stable deer population and possibly even increasing. Compared to last year, it's down a little bit. Last year, and actually our previous five-year average, was 70 fawns per 100 does. But still looking good for doe-fawn ratios. For the bucks, our average this year was 40 bucks per 100 does, and that's pretty similar. Last year, we just had 41 bucks per 100 does, and so fairly consistent and good numbers for those buck ratios. For the yearling buck ratios, so remember, these are the ones that indicate how those fawns are surviving, we had 12 yearling bucks per 100 does, and that's a little lower than last year where we had 16, but still indicative that those recruitment into older age classes is doing all right. And so that's kind of the big numbers to take home for mule deer. But while we're out classifying mule deer, we also look at whitetail. And so we classified 1,386 whitetail deer, and our fawn ratios was 69 fawns per 100 does. So I think not a big surprise, that population is doing pretty well. And the buck ratios, we had about 43 bucks per 100 does.
Okay. And when you start one of these surveys, how long does it take from beginning to end to complete a survey?
Really depends. You got to focus, when you're on the ground, you need good light, and you also want to be out when the animals are active. So if you're going out at first light, you might be able to classify for a couple hours. In the evening, it seems like the window that you can classify is a little shorter before you lose light, but you get sometimes a lot more numbers of active animals. And we do these surveys from about mid-November to mid-December. And so pretty much any day during that time, if you have good conditions, so you don't want a lot of wind, you don't want it to be super overcast where you don't have really good light to see animals. Because as people around here know, during that first sunlight where you get the alpenglow in the mountains, those deer really pop out and it's really obvious to see them. But if you have that really flat, low light, they can be hard to see and you really don't want to miss any. And then throughout that time, for areas that are harder to access, we'll survey with a helicopter. And that'll be pretty much a half day to a full day survey. We try to get as much of those counts in as we can on those days.
Okay, and then what exactly do you do with all these numbers?
What we do with these numbers is a couple things. So as I was explaining this, we'll compare to previous years and to averages of maybe the last 5 or 10 years. And so we get an idea of trends over time. And we actually have some population models that take into account these ratios as well as our hunter harvest information. So say you sell 100 tags, only a certain percent of people that buy those tags will actually go hunt. And then of those people that actually go hunt with that tag, only a certain percentage of those people are actually able to harvest. And through our hunter harvest surveys, we're able to collate all of that information. And so these population models that we run take that into account, as well as these counts. And we can kind of see what the population trends are and compare those to our herd objectives and also to our landowner surveys and our hunter satisfaction surveys. And so all that information together we will use. In fact, we're going to meet after this right now to start the conversation about what our 2018 hunting seasons will look like.
Okay. So these numbers, everything looks pretty good going into 2018?
Yeah, I would say so. One thing that we have noted in some of these deer herds, particularly the Upper Powder River mule deer herd, is every year we seem to have pretty good numbers, particularly pretty consistent fawn-doe ratios. However, we still hear concern that the population isn't doing very well and doesn't seem to actually be increasing. And so we're really curious what's going on there. And so we're right now in the process of applying for some grant funds to study that population better. And the goal with that would be to put out, I think we're hoping for 45 radio callers in that herd unit, and this would start next winter. And with that information, not only can we find out where animals are moving, what habitat they're using, but also look at these vital rates. What's their survival? How many fawns are they having? And potentially even look at their fawn survival. I'd say numbers are looking pretty good, but there's still some unanswered questions that we're working hard to try to figure out.
Okay. And then coming up, looks like early next month, a moose survey as well.
Yeah, that's correct. So we're also in the middle of a moose radio collaring research study. And so we've been, since last winter, trying to dart and deploy radio collars on moose throughout the whole Bighorns. And so we're doing that both aerially and from the ground. And in conjunction with that, every year we fly to survey moose, to count the number of moose that we're seeing. And so we're trying to coordinate this year so that when we do our normal moose survey and we're counting moose, we can also use those locations to figure out where the moose are so that the following week when we have our aerial captures, we have a good idea to where to find those moose so we can put more radio collars out.
When you put those radio collars on, how long do you track a certain moose?
You know, it all comes down to battery on those collars. And so the way that most of these collars are set up...
You can't just leave extra batteries out and around and the moose will change them?
Unfortunately, they can't go home at night and plug in their radio collar. Otherwise, we could collect them for a lot longer.
Sure.
So there's always a trade-off. And these collars are really awesome. They're GPS technology, and they actually use a satellite to email you their location. So it's a little bit of a time lag, but essentially you're getting real-time data. But there's always this trade-off between, do I want a location every single hour, but then your collar might last just a year? Or do I want a location once a week, and then your collar might last 5 years? And so we're getting, I believe, 4 locations per day. It may be more than that. Somewhere in that range, and the collar should last 3 hours. And so that's about the life of this particular study.
Okay. 3 years, you said 3 hours.
Sorry, thank you. Yeah. Yes, the collar should last.
I was going to say 3 hours, pretty close.
3 years, yeah, they'll definitely need to plug those ones in.
All right, so that's a look at the moose survey, and the next thing, we've got a bunch of important dates coming up, bud.
Brady, before we go on, though, I want to bring some up. Cheyenne mentioned the hunter harvest surveys, and those are a very important component in calculating some of these numbers and setting seasons the following year. So they're very important, and just encourage people to always complete your hunter harvest survey. If you provide your email address when you buy a license, you'll get an email sometime. The season may still be going or after the season, and asking you to complete this survey. Those are very important to us, and we get a lot of good information from those. So I would just encourage people to, number one, be honest, because that
doesn't know, help you if people lie, does
right?
It?
No, it doesn't help at all. And the better the information, the better. We can manage the wildlife better. So just wanted to mention that because she mentioned those hunter harvest surveys and that's just a good thing for hunters to do.
And you mentioned that people will get those by email. I must not have given my email because I got one by mail in the actual mail. How can I switch that then to start getting them by email?
The next time you apply for a license, if you provide your email address and we do not, unless you want us to, you can check a little thing there that says it's okay for you, Game and Fish Department, to give somebody my email address. If you don't check that little box allowing us to do that, we will not share that with any. We don't sell those. nor will we share the okay. with anybody. So it's confidential. We only use it for our purposes to mail you the Hunter Harvest Survey. Or, you know, another sidelight here. Say you have a sheep permit and there's a fire, and we can email all those people that have a sheep permit in area 3, 4, whatever it is, and say, hey, listen, there's been a fire here. We can, if you want to, you can delay your permit for a year. So we can contact you directly much easier if you provide us with an email.
Absolutely.
So.
All right, so people can do that, and I'm sure that helps you out a lot. I'm sure also doing it electronically probably is a little more convenient and even saves money.
More convenient, and we've calculated that it saves about $3 per response.
Okay.
So, and that $3 is license money that we...
So if you know why your license is to go up, get on the electronically.
Yeah. If you do it electronic, it saves us, which saves the hunters three bucks a response. So,
absolutely.
You know, it's just all around a good thing to do.
All right. And now jumping into some of these important dates.
Yeah, we got in, you know, I'll start out. And if you guys, any of you three want to chime in here with anything, be sure and do it. But, you know, probably the most, the one that's coming up the quickest, January 31st, that's the deadline for non-residents to apply for elk licenses. So if you have a non-resident friend or father, brother, whatever, that wants to come hunt in Wyoming, they've got, just over about a week to get that done. Go online, go on our website, and work through the application. Pretty simple to do, really. It you know, just click a few clicks, and you can get that license application in. So that's the first date on January 31. Then probably the next couple, the Wyoming Game Fish Department right now is, we're undergoing a, it's called a public engagement process, where we've hired a contractor to go out and we want to know what people, their opinions, their ideas on. And there's a whole slew of things going on. But there's two public meetings that are coming up. There's one February 7th in Gillette. We're calling this the Forging the Future of Wyoming's Wildlife. We're just getting folks' opinion and comments. So there will be a public meeting in Gillette February 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Camplex, at the Wyoming Center Frontier Hall out there at the Camplex. And then the following night, on February 8th, there will be a public meeting in Sheridan. And it will be also from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Best Western Sheridan Center, the Snow Goose Room. That's the one that's on 612 North Main Street, the one with the walkway over Main Street there in Sheridan. So if folks are interested, we encourage them to come.
Is that just open to the public?
It's open to the public.
Need tickets,
anybody can
or
come.
Reservations or anything?
No. Wide open to the public. And just we want to talk about wildlife, primarily wildlife and wildlife related, that sort of stuff. You know, we don't necessarily need to talk about car crashes on the interstate. That's not what we're doing. It's wildlife related stuff. So if you have opinions, that and some, you know, maybe some outdoor recreation stuff as well, but we're mainly interested in the wildlife related information from people. You know, and along those lines, there's a right now on our website, there's the opportunity, there's an open forum where you can go to the Wyoming Game Fish website, and it a couple clicks, you can get into these open forums. I think there's 6 or 7 different subjects. There's wildlife, hunting, fishing, boating, hunter safety, and so there's a lot of different things. And you can go into that forum and type whatever comment that you want. Again, we would appreciate
clean.
If you could keep it wildlife related, and you know, we don't manage wild horses, so it really doesn't, you know, there's nothing we can do about wild horses. Those are federally protected, so you know, I guess you can put the comment there, but it really won't, it doesn't pertain to the Wyoming Game Fish Department.
Okay.
So you can do that, and so that's all part of that Forging the Future of Wyoming's Wildlife, and a lot of different ways that you can get us comments or if you have questions, why, you know, don't be afraid to get a hold of us. So you know, the next thing, another application period is We're in the middle of it right now. You got a little bit more time, but the application period for resident to non-resident moose, bighorn sheep, and mountain goat, that started January 2nd. It'll run to the end of February. February 28th will be the deadline for that. So, and that's one that you know, if you have, especially if you have maximum preference points or whatever, you and want to hunt one of those species, make sure you get your application in by the end of
Don't
February.
Procrastinate.
Don't procrastinate.
It'll be March 1st and you'll be like, oops.
And, then you're done. Now, you can go a little bit later and buy a preference point and still kind of, you know, stay in the running. But if you're going to hunt one of those species or, you know, this is a year to hunt one of those species, you got to get that application in. So, and then starting in about a week, the application period for wild bison that are hunted in the, you know, in the western part of the state, that application period is February 1 to February 28th. That's the month of February if you're interested in hunting a wild bison in our state. So, got to do that. And Cheyenne mentioned, we're after this radio show here at 10 o'clock, these three are going to go talk about seasons. Season setting, we're in that big time right now. That's taken up actually most of the Wildlife Division's time. So there we'll have a lot of internal discussions and stuff, but then...
So when you say set up seasons, the start date and end date for certain hunting seasons changes?
Well, maybe. A lot of times the start dates don't necessarily change a lot, but maybe the end date, and a prime example of that is... Area 36 cow elk season this year is an example. A year ago, in 16, that season ended on December 15th, right, Jim?
Right.
And then in 17, we had some extra cows, wanted to get a little bit, a better kill if we could. So we extended that season to the 31st of December. So
Okay. Sometimes
that end will, but the main thing these guys are going to talk about is numbers. How many licenses in each area should we issue this year? Based on these surveys, whether it's aerial, ground, landowner contacts, that hunter's harvest survey, all that, they've put all that information together, really starting to do it, and they're getting down the nitty-gritty now to, how many buck antelope licenses are we going to issue in, antelope area 102 where we are here across the highway in 22 or 16 or 10? And how many, what do we have for a population? Do we need to increase or decrease doe antelope numbers, deer numbers? That's what they're going to start really getting heavily into talk about. And then after all that stuff is put together, then we will have some proposals. And we will have a series of open houses. The one here in Buffalo will be on March 27th. That last week of March will be our open house public meeting time period for hunting, for setting the big game seasons for 2018. So March 27th, Buffalo open house. It'll be from 4 to 7 at the Johnson County Library.
Okay.
So, and then in the next night, March 28th, we will have a public meeting in KC at the KC Library, and that's a public meeting, so there will actually be a start time 6 o'clock, and whatever presentations. The rest of these are just open houses where people can come and go anytime during that 4 to 7. We'll have biologists and game wardens will there at tables, and people can come in and find out seasons not only here, but by that time we should have proposed seasons from across the state, and we will have most of those or all of those available actually during those.
So when people come to the open house, it's not like there's a certain presentation going on for 3 hours.
No.
It's just open for 3 hours. Yep. And they'll take care of you as you come in.
If you want to come in at 4 o'clock, find out what you know in 15 minutes and leave, no big deal.
Okay.
You get off work at 5 and come there at 5:30, same thing. Come in, find out, visit with these folks and find out what your antelope season is going to be here and what we're going to propose for sheep season 4 or 5 or whatever. You can find out all that information as soon as you find out. The open houses are come and go. At KC, we actually have a public meeting where it'll start at 6 and then and then go. And then just for folks, on March 26th, that's the first one that we will kick off. We will have an open house in Sheridan. That one's from 4 to 6, and that's at our Sheridan Regional office. So a lot of meetings during that week, and then the following, after we have those series of open houses and public meetings, then we get together again and say, okay, what did we hear? What do we need to do? And then we will have a final regional public meeting on April 2nd. And I believe is that a Monday night or Tuesday? Monday night, I believe. I believe April 2nd is on a Monday. Anyway, it's April 2nd at the Sheridan Regional Office will be our final meeting. That is a public meeting. It'll start at 7 o'clock. There'll be a presentation of what we found out during the previous week's open houses and meetings. We'll discuss that. And for folks that don't know where our Sheridan Regional Office, the address is actually 700 Valley View. It's on East 5th Street, right across from the Highway Department rest area there. We're on the south side of the highway. The rest area is on the north side. So easy to find, right off the interstate there. But that will be on April 2nd. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to add, Brady, so things that people should know is that the whole season setting structure and how we set seasons for the following year is about a six-month process. We start collecting data in November, classifying, talking to landowners, all the way through what Bud just set our final dates, and then that after our final season setting meeting in Sheridan, then it goes to the commission, and the commission takes also then, comments from the public. And so it's a six-month process to decide what we're going to do for the following fall.
Okay.
And I don't think people realize how long
it
takes.
Yeah, because if they just listen to that, for a month they go out and take some pictures and ride in a helicopter and yada, yada. But there's a little more to it.
Yeah, a little bit more.
There's actually quite a bit more to it, And the other thing, and what Jim mentioned, that'll go to our commission at their April meeting. And I believe that meeting is like April 24 and 25 or 25, 26. I can't remember the exact dates. In Lander, the commission will vote on these seasons. And once those are passed, then and only then, they'll send a email or notify the printer to print the actual regulation booklets. Those are not available right now because we don't know the season. So it won't be until after these seasons have been set, voted on by the commission, those get printed and distributed. Usually those booklets don't come out until, maybe the first week of June. So the actual hunting regulations, and last year all those were in one booklet, where before we've had, each species had their own pamphlet. We've combined those and that has seemed to work well. So if anybody's looking for the actual regulations, you can look at 17s, but 18s aren't out yet and won't be till June. So.
Okay. And next on the list here, you're hiring AIS technicians.
Yeah, this is at the boating inspection stuff, the aquatic invasive species program that we have. Mike Locatelli, who's our AIS coordinator for the region, he wants to hire, probably eight maybe or so technicians. They'll be working at, some will work out of Sheridan, some will work at Keyhole Reservoir, and some will work out of Sundance. So, if anybody is
that
interested,
full-time work, part-time work?
No, they'll start, it's full-time,
seasonal.
40 hours a week, seasonal, yeah. Starting maybe May, early May, running through the end of September for these mostly.
Okay.
And a lot of, the one thing that people should know about these is you work weekends and holidays because
the times people are boating.
That's when people are boating, and that's when you need boat inspections. So your days off in that 40-hour week during the summer would be...
You'll have Tuesday and Wednesday,
they might
maybe
be Tuesday and Thursday or whatever, yeah. So if anybody's interested, make sure you just give Mike a call, and I'm going to give a phone number here. So folks that are interested, if you're ready, it's 307-683-7715. That's Mike's cell phone number. And, or you can call the Sheridan office, but get a hold of Mike and ask him about the more particulars if you're interested.
Okay. And as we are here in the middle of winter, it's critical conditions for wildlife.
Winter's always it's a tough time period for those critters out there.
For all of us.
Yeah, for all of us, the snow and cold, food can be scarce, and so, they need to conserve those fat reserves, and you know, so we just ask that, you know, folks, and of course, it can also be a great time to, because animals are concentrated in areas, and folks want to go look at them, you know, and I like to go look at the herds of elk and stuff. So we just ask people to, you know, do that from a distance. Don't try to, you know, get that really good close up shot of a
go nice, get that selfie with you and that bison.
Yeah, don't do that. You know, it's use a if you want to get some good shots, maybe get a camera with a, you know, one of those long lenses, and you can take those. Anytime you harass those animals out there, they're gonna use more energy than if they could just lay there in the sun, so just realize that, you know, we had that cold spell around Christmas time, and we actually we lost some fawns during that period, and these guys can speak to that probably. They were called, and you know, folks had a fawn or two die, even though it's pretty short duration and wasn't extremely cold. You know, those smaller, weaker fawns, some of them died already. So and Cheyenne mentioned the deer study that we'd like to do. You know, it seems like in Supper Powder River mule deer herd, you know, we have pretty good production, but it seems the recruitment is not all that good. We just maybe have a little bit of a difficult time getting those critters to be 1 and 2 years old. So these winter conditions are the big factor in there in getting those fawns past that first winter. So but anyway, tell folks be cognizant of the conditions out there, and make sure you just view things from a distance. Along those lines, there's some winter range closures on the Bighorn Mountains. There are some areas on the Bighorn National Forest that are designated travel management areas S1 and S2. Those are closed to motorized vehicles either all year, which are the S1 areas, or from November 16 to May 15. Those are the S2 areas. Those areas are where a lot of moose and elk may be spending the winter. And if you ride your snow machine through there, which is illegal, but if you do it, you can be bumping those critters, and they can use a lot of those fat reserves and can really, you know, decrease some winter survival. So and typically they're on the forest, but they're kind of right behind our wildlife management areas, whether it's the Bud Love or the Kearns or the Amsden Creek areas. So those, and we have that in like the Ed O'Taylor unit that's down in Justin's area. Same thing. There's a winter closure there on that. So don't want people driving all over that with motorized vehicles during this critical winter time. So.
And right along those lines of disturbing wildlife, you have reports of dogs chasing wildlife.
Well, we always seem to get a few reports, and the reports come to these three. You know, if you're in Buffalo, you probably call Jim, Casey, you probably call Justin, but I'm sure Cheyenne will get those kind of phone calls too. So,
and we get the calls through the sheriff's office when people see dogs harassing game, and they end up killing animals every year. And a lot of pet owners that I've talked to, you know, the first response is, I didn't think my dog would do that. And somebody obviously witnessed their dog. And, you know, like Bud had said, these animals are stressed to begin with. And then running them in deep snow, even the smallest dogs, you know, especially if they team up, if there's a couple dogs. So not only is a loss of that wildlife species to the state, but, I mean, pet owners can receive citations too. And that's generally what happens if their dog.
So the dog doesn't get the ticket, the person who owns the dog.
That's right, yeah. Okay.
And as we're in winter, you also get a lot of vehicle wildlife collisions this time of year.
Yeah, that's another issue that I wish we could somehow wave a magic wand and reduce or eliminate those. But you got slick roads and you got animals that sometimes come to the edge of the road for forage, and the one thing we see is we'll have a dead deer or whatever along the side of the road, And a lot of times we'll have birds come start to feed on it. Bald eagles, gold eagles, crows, ravens, magpies. But, you know, when they're right along the road and those eagles will just gorge themselves to where they become pretty slow flyers. And if a big truck comes along and that animal's real close there, they get struck a lot. And we pick up eagles every winter that have been struck by a vehicle. And so, we, you know, if we could, like I said, it'd just be nice to wave a magic wand and do away with that. So, unfortunately, people sometimes maybe aren't the best at driving in winter conditions and drive too fast for the conditions.
Well, and especially with, you mentioned the birds, like maybe chomping on a piece of wildlife. A lot of times you drive and you expect that bird to fly away right when you get close to it, but maybe sometimes they don't get out of the way in time.
They don't get way out of time, you know, and they'll fly one way or the other. Unfortunately, sometimes they fly in front of your vehicle rather than the other way. So that's why a lot of times those animals are removed by the highway department. They're taken off the highway, and those guys are very good at that. And they travel every morning and do it, and they'll drag them off the road away so they don't get so those birds don't get hit, and you know, so they're cognizant of that too, and we'll remove those off the road and stuff. So just to reach, you know, and even in town here, you know, our roads in town can get pretty slick, and we got a lot of deer in town. You know, you can you don't have to be on the interstate to hit a deer or going up the mountain. You can hit a deer right in town if you're
traveling. I had a deer run into the side of my car, but it was last year, but right here in downtown Buffalo.
Yeah. So, you know, those wildlife collisions, vehicle wildlife collisions, you know, they can happen any time of year, but because of slick roads and the conditions where they're out feeding a lot and active trying to find food, why it's they seem to go up starting in the fall during the rut and throughout the winter. So.
And if there's people out there that might see something illegal, you'd like their help to report that stuff.
Absolutely, and I'm going to let Jim and Justin talk about that because that's their bailiwick. That's what they do.
Well, going back, Bud, a little bit on roadkill animals, on roadkill bucks, it is illegal to pick up, to cut off antlers or any part off roadkill wildlife. So people should know that.
So if you hit a deer, you're not allowed to take that deer?
No.
Okay.
No. Whether the trophy value, the horns or antlers, or even the meat.
Okay.
And
what's the reason for that?
Well, the meat, because we really don't know the condition of that animal when it's hit. There could be internal organs, fluids, gastric, you know, that potentially it might look healthy and fine.
It could be dangerous.
But it could be dangerous.
Okay.
And that's a liability that the department and the state just don't want to have on their hands. There's also a brand new law, and we talk about this, we're going to be coming soon here into the antler hunting seasons, which will be later this spring, but there's a new law starting July 1st, trespassing to collect antlers, and that specifically is in the hands of Game and Fish now. It used to be criminal trespass where only the sheriff's office could handle it, but now game wardens also have that in our statute. So you need permission on private land even now to pick up antlers. As far as other wildlife, you know, we still might have some illegal activity. There's still could be some hunting, especially small game, rabbits and snowshoe hares. The hunting season's still going on. We have mountain lice season. So I guess any unusual activity that people might see if they're out enjoying the outdoors or watching wildlife, anything that's suspect, that just doesn't look right, don't hesitate to call. It might certainly be worthy for us to go check it out. Spotlighting activities at night, you really can't spotlight on any type of public lands, whether it's BLM, Forest Service, or state lands. So there could be situations like that where that could be some illegal activity. You know, if you do see something unusual that you want to report, sure, get as much information as you can. The location, you know, if you get a vehicle description, license plate. A lot of times we get real vague reports, and really where we can't do anything at all with them because they may have forgotten to even tell us where this happened. And that happens quite often. People want us to be aware, but they're extremely vague, so we can't really even follow up on them. So the more information you have, the better. the time and date. And I don't know if Justin has anything else to add to that.
I would just say that a lot of the cases that we make are from the public. We get spread pretty thin around hunting season, so any call that you can make, whether you think it's wrong or you think it's right, if you just make the phone call and we can help you make that decision, and call the Stop Poaching hotline, and they can always get a hold of us if we don't have a cell service or something. But yeah, definitely a lot of the cases that we make come in from public calls. They're the hunters and the people of the public are our eyes and ears, so it definitely helps us out.
Okay, excellent. And Bud, we got just a couple minutes left here. We'll jump into fishing regulations, public meetings.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we're really hot and heavy into hunting regulations and season settings. But this spring, later on, after the hunting season are set and decided by our commission, it will be time to talk about fishing regulations. And our fish division has informed me that they will probably have a couple public meetings in late April or early May. So we got some time. We'll talk about these in future shows, Brady. But they don't even know the places or times yet, but just told me to kind of give people a heads up. So if you have some ideas or comments about fishing regulations, be thinking about those. Doesn't hurt to call those guys right now and say, hey, you know, I'm what about this, or you know, kind of talk about it. So and those actual meetings will be later this spring, and then those will be formulated. It's the same process they go through. Eventually those will be voted on by the commission, and then those new regulations will take effect on January 1 of 2019.
Okay, and we'll finish up here just hitting on ice fishing real quick. I know some people are a little nervous. We've had some warm days. Today's going to be in the mid-40s. Is that affecting ice anywhere?
You know, I don't really think so. What do you guys think? You know, we had foot of ice, you know, in places, and you know, just one or two warm days probably isn't going to, you know, the sun's still pretty low in the sky, and still gets
pretty cold at night.
It still gets pretty chilly at night, and so I think that ice will stay firm for a while.
So I'll be good on DeSmet this afternoon if I decide to go out there.
Yeah, I think you'd be good to go, and the reports I'm hearing, certain areas catching some nice.
Which
nice
areas
ground.
Were they catching?
Well, I had a guy tell me that he caught some nice fish off the South Dam.
Okay,
you know, and I saw some drove out there a week or so ago, and saw a couple guys just as I pulled up, right in the mouth of Barky Draw. So, you know, there's they can be caught any place, but you know, just you have to stay after it. And of course, Healy, a lot of perch. They're kind of on the small side, but a lot of fun.
And Tyhack too, also.
And Tyhack, yeah. Jim talked to some folks up there.
Did really well last weekend. Yeah.
Okay.
So you know, I mean, it's we gotta. A lot of opportunities here pretty close, and if you're an ice angler and want to go get out, now's the time to do it. And
what else is there to do when it's cold?
Well, it can be a lot of fun, and you know, maybe the perch are small at Healy, but there's probably no better place to take a little kid fishing.
Yeah, if you just want to start reeling them in, that's the place.
Yeah, because the action is pretty constant and pretty fast, and take a little kid out there and get him introduced to ice fishing. It's a great place to do it.
Absolutely. All right, talking with Bud Stewart and company here this morning. Guys, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks, Brady. Appreciate it.
This is Community Speaks, brought to you by The Prescription Shop on Fort Street in Buffalo. Keep it tuned, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, KBBS.